listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And you're listening to State of the Art.
Here on LA Talk Radio, as always, powered by Breakdown Services. Delighted to have them as our presenting sponsor. Michael, tell them who we got today.
Absolutely. We have two wonderful people. Skylar Astin from Broadway's Spring Awakening, more recently from Rent at the Hollywood Bowl, sold out for three nights, playing to just a small crowd of people every night, about 17,000,
yeah,
I would say.
I think 17,000. I think they said they reached capacity on the final night.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
And you saw that, didn't you, Mike?
Oh, I did. Yeah. And I interviewed this young man the days before as he was getting ready to hit the bowl. And had, actually, the day that we interviewed each other for Broadway World
Television. See, now, oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when I was his age, hitting the bowl meant something completely different.
Oh, gee.
Well, usually involved a lighter.
I would imagine it would, Paul. Yes, yes. No, but he was just the day before seen the Hollywood Bowl for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Which, I think, of course, we talked actually the day before I checked it out, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
so your first time seeing the bowl was the day before
or
performing
the
it?
The day after. You had seen it for the first time.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he's from New York, so everything like that that we take for granted, such as the beautiful Hollywood Bowl, he's seeing for the first time.
Exactly.
Not only seeing it, but starring on the stage.
Yeah, and of course, you know, there's nothing to see in New York.
many things, but you know.
Talking to a New Yorker, pal, what are you trying to say?
Don't get to
you take care of that
Paul.
Thing for me?
Yeah.
And also, Otto Woolfolk is with us, the lovely and talented Otto Woolfolk, who's an actress, producer, a writer. She recently in the film Hiramaya Bridge, playing Danny Glover's daughter. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do.
And she is also here representing Virtual Channel Network,
yes.
One of the other services offered by Breakdown Services, our presenting sponsor. So delighted to have both of them.
You got to love Otto.
You got to love Otto. Yeah.
So how was your week, Paul?
My week was good. It's a pretty charged day for me. It's an emotionally charged day for me, Michael.
Why would you say that?
Because
what's
I don't
something
know if you
special?
Know this. I don't know if you know this, but I'm a huge Elvis fan.
Oh, really?
And yes, I am. And today is a memorable day for me. August 16th, 33 years ago today, the king passed away.
Oh, my goodness.
33 years ago.
33 years. Were you Elvis fans, guys?
I was never alive during his time. But
I mean, of his music today.
I am now, yeah, of course.
Okay.
He's the king.
Hmm. Yeah, and Otto.
He was before my time, but definitely, you know.
Okay, and then Paul sat here feeling old.
No, listen, Paul. my aunt Debbie was obsessed with Elvis, so she always had pictures all over her house.
Do you visit her in the nursing home now?
No, she's a chipper chap.
I'm kidding. No, but I was a huge Elvis fan, and so much so that, you know, Michael, you know, I'm normally not into the whole psychic thing.
Yes.
But I decided that I would research this. I spoke to a psychic to see if maybe we could connect with Elvis from the other side.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
And try to see what was going on. It turns out Elvis is 75 years old now.
Yeah. Wow.
But he's still performing. He's huge in heaven. I mean, people are just, I mean, he's still packing them in.
Yeah.
So because he's so busy today, I wasn't able to speak to Elvis directly, but I was able to speak to his PR representative in heaven.
But of course, he would have one there too.
Michael Starlight was actually his name. Michael Starlight. And they told me that what his playlist is for his current 75th anniversary tour. So I just want to share a couple of the tracks.
It's a set list.
It's a set list, exactly.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Playlist,
set list.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm a product of the iPod generation.
That's okay.
The set list. So there's a couple of songs. Blue Suede Orthopedic Shoes. Big hit. my personal favorite, Can't Help Falling in the Tub. Is it another one?
All right.
G.I. Blues. Big hit. G.I. Blues.
Well, of course it was a big hit. That was the name of the song, wasn't
G.I.
it?
G.I. Blues.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. In this case, it means gastrointestinal.
Oh.
Right. Yeah.
I see.
Wear My Ring Around Your Neck, Right Next to Your Life Alert. is another big
move. Right.
Wow. That was a long walk.
Skylar over here.
That was a
wait, what to think of this, Paul?
It's a long walk for the store to be closed, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And last but not least, on the Elvis 75th anniversary playlist, we have She's a Hard-Headed Woman, So She's Fairly Safe from Osteoporosis.
What about, like, love me tenderly, unless my back will go?
Well, I had a variation on that,
You're
but
hired.
I didn't do
You're
it
hired.
Because I thought it was obscene. Mine was love me tender. In other words, remove the dentures. Lady! Sorry. Sorry.
Anyone? Anyone? No one?
Anyone? Oh. Is this thing on? So, all right. That's my bit. That's my bit, Michael.
Well,
in
you
honor
know,
of the King's 75th birthday.
Well, I must share a story briefly with you, too, Paul. I mean, I appreciated Elvis, and when I was a little kid, my mom and dad used to drive us to Vegas, where there was my two sisters and myself, and we would drive to Vegas. Have you ever driven to Las Vegas?
No.
You haven't done that yet.
It's a cheap flight. It's a cheap flight.
It's a cheap flight, and it's a cheap drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cheap city. It is.
And you're a cheap person, so it works out.
No, seriously, there's a stretch when you drive there that is like, it's Death Valley. It's going through the Mojave. It is a, it's kind of a spooky little stretch, isn't
it?
It's,
there's nothing.
There's nothing. There seriously is nothing. And you suddenly, you know, after a few hours of that, you arrive into the lights of Las Vegas, and it's all quite spectacular. But we used to go so frequently. And when I was 8, 9 years old in that neighborhood there, my father, who was a Cadillac guy, and he would be sitting in the front seat, and my mother and my sisters to my side, we were in the back seat. You know, we're all dressed. Now, not like a normal family, mind you. Not like a normal family that would be just casually dressed for a five-hour drive to
oh,
go
no,
to
you
Las
gotta,
Vegas.
You got to get out of the car and go right to the place.
Yeah.
You're ready.
Exactly. So, totally. My dad's in a little tie and little suit thing, and I am dressed appropriately. What would you say that would be, 20?
How old were you?
8.
Okay, I'm going to say tuxedo with full tails.
Okay. Something along those lines.
Yeah.
And my
a top hat.
There you go.
You guys are like the Italian Von Trapps.
Yeah, but he was 8. So what about the shorts?
Right, exactly. And the tails, but still with shorts.
Really, really.
The Von Trappinos.
My mother was the best, though, because she's a very beautiful woman, and she would be dressed just so appropriately. And in those days, the hair, of course, was lacquered, meaning, you know, with the hairspray.
Right.
The Aquanet.
Yes, Aquanet.
To the point where, you know, if you threw a ball on her hair, it would bounce off, and it would still be in place. So she had, you know, the flip.
The Marlo Thomas flip.
The Marlo Thomas flip. Right. And we're in the days of that I'm referring to, air conditioning in a car was an enormous expense that only the very rich could afford this.
And plus, it attracted the dinosaurs. So
yeah, there you go.
Sorry.
And so we are in the car, and there is in lieu of that, most people had in their cars a unit that was you rolled the window up, or in the Cadillac case, you did have an electric window, and it met the unit, and it had a drawstring, and it had water in it.
All right, and it like it missed it.
Yes, it would miss the inside of the car, so it would cool everything down. Right, so we're in that serious stretch of the desert. And I'm dying in the back seat, in that tuxedo. I am dying.
Well, with the smoking jacket, too.
And the smoking jacket, which I had just changed out of the closer we got to Vegas. You know, I changed. But I said to my father, I'm sitting behind him, I said, Dad, I'm hot back here. I said, you got to pull that thing. Please, pull that thing. And he said, Michael, he's very stern all the time. He said, we don't have enough water to do that again until we get closer to Vegas. I said, Dad, I'm serious. I'm sweating back here. And, you know, the girls are like, you know, playing with each other. They're off into their whole world, their own world. And he said, no, absolutely not. And I said, all right. And my mother, and in that moment of that, my discontent, my mother is starting to turn around to say something to me. And I decide to pull the cord myself.
Oh, no.
I pulled it just a little too hard, and all of the water came out into the car, all over my father and his suit, and more importantly, my mother's hair, which was now sealed to her face with the Aquanet.
Sealed
to the face, and the mascara running down her face.
Yeah.
So, and I fortunately did not have any.
Of Dennis the
yeah, or the bad seed.
I fortunately had no water on me, and that's all that was really important at that moment in time, except that I was a little cooler. But that's how we arrived in Vegas, and my mother had to walk into the front desk looking like this. Oh, hello, Mrs. Sterling. Hello, Mr. Sterling. And that it was, I was, you know, hung up in the room there for quite a few hours after that little incident.
Yeah, probably tied up.
And I can't get to my Elvis story because we really don't have the time. But to
if we have time at the end, we'll kick off next week's episode because you got to tell the Elvis story, and we can have an Elvis. We'll have an Elvis month.
Yeah. Needless to say, that's how they came up with the saying "What happens in Vegas."
Exactly.
And it was a very magical moment for me.
Yeah.
Because I ended up with Mr. Presley in his suite.
On
the penthouse.
At 8 years old.
At 8 years old. I worked my way up there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow.
One thing we have to interject.
We missed a really integral part of that story.
We'll share it, but we can't share it now because we'll share it if we have time after we talk to you guys because we don't want to shortchange you because you came in for this. But I will say the one thing you have to share, Michael, because it briefly. Tell them about the particular habit you, as an eight-year-old, would have when you attended the hotel Vegas.
What
you do. 8 years old, he was doing
this. Sahara Hotel was then, you know, like the hotel where you stayed at that time. And I would, as soon as I got in, I would always go, you know, change right into my bathing suit, go down to the pool, and get my tan at eight. And I would also stop en route to the pool, stop in the lobby and go to the white courtesy telephones and call myself. I would have the operator page, Michael Sterling.
He would, at 8 years
at
old.
8 years old.
You're like the most baller 8 year old I've ever.
You're right.
You wear your smoking jacket and your tan.
I would 8 years old, he's paging himself to be paged at the pool.
This would be all day long. Not just once, but all day long. So I eventually knew every staff member of the Sahara Hotel in about, I would say, a week's stay.
And they
I
would say, that's the guy with drowned rats for parents.
there you go.
But let's get to our first guest.
Absolutely.
And Michael, if you would introduce this gentleman, because you're more, since you just saw Rent, I think it's more suited that you do.
Skylar Astin from Broadway's Spring Awakening, and also more recently from the Hollywood Bowl's production of Rent, August 6th through 8th. In which Skylar co-starred and had the pleasure of working with Vanessa Hudgens and direction by Neil Patrick Harris and an amazing cast of people. Wayne Brady was in this show and Nicole Scherzinger, who was unbelievable in this show, right?
She was a star. She is a star.
So let me just ask you, let's start here where we should start.
Okay.
You're new to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been here?
About a year and a half.
A year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And one of your first major jobs in town on the stage is at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
So how lucky can you get there? I mean, tell us about the experience, the process of going through that, getting the job.
Yeah. My manager, my agents, they don't really skip a beat as far as getting me in for things.
Right.
But for some reason, I was looking on one of the Broadway websites, and it said, this year, Hollywood Bowl is doing Rent, directed by Neil Patrick Harris. No cast has been announced yet. I didn't know if they were going yet or how far off that was even going to happen. And I rarely do this, but I actually called my manager and as if he wasn't going to do it anyway. And was like, listen, Mike, you have to get me out for that. I really feel like I missed an opportunity when it was in New York. I was just too young when it was out, and it's just such a dream role. And I'm like literally going through this whole like laundry list of reasons why I need an opportunity. He's like, yeah, we got you an appointment. I don't know why you keep talking. I was trying to tell you. It's like literally he was about to call me within hours to tell me he had got me an appointment. And
see, but you know what? I like that tenacity. You must be a Virgo. Are you a Virgo?
Yeah, that's weird.
I'm a Virgo.
That. Yeah. So I'm a Virgo Libra cusp.
Start paging yourself at hotels.
Exactly.
I was a Virgo till college, and then I'm sorry.
Oh my God!
It's another place.
The 7-year-old Virgo.
Sorry.
You've got a birthday September
23rd.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Mine's the
13th. What are you guys getting me?
Mine's the 13th.
Very cool.
We'll get you something. You never know. So go ahead.
Yeah. So they got me the audition, and I know that they were saying. You know, they were seeing everybody, but they were really seeking stars, and it's kind of an all-star production of Rent. And I actually think I was there. Vanessa was there the same day as me, but I think she was before I saw her name on the sign-in list. And of course, I recognize her name because she's a movie star. So I was just like, wow, they're really seeing the whole like kit and caboodle here. And I really thought, I felt like I had nothing to lose, really, by just going in there. I think it actually comforted me. A lot of actors would get stressed about, you know, by that. But I think I was just, I just figured, all right, well, now I'm just going to go in and go for it because, you know, I definitely have nothing to lose here, only everything to gain. So I went in there. Neil was there. Tim Weil, the musical director and original music arranger, was there. I think Jonathan Larson's father, Al, was there. Wow. I mean, it was really like... Jamal Sims, our choreographer, was there, and you know all the casting directors, Michael Donovan and Marjorie, and you know it was really comforting. They were a really friendly room, and we did it over at that same church.
At the United Methodist
exactly,
Church. Exactly. Yes.
That we hung
oh,
out.
Oh, the one in
day.
Highland.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, with the one with the ribbon. With
exactly.
The
yep.
Ribbon on.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah. And we did it on the basketball court. And I'm like a joke cracker, especially in audition situations. So I'm just like saying, I'm like making foul shot jokes. I don't even know what I. But it was. I think it was very Mark of me to kind of deflect with humor, you know, right. Kind of a thing. So. And I just, you know, I did a couple of scenes and songs from the show, and Neil was amazing and really provided a great audition scenario. And
well, hadn't Neil played that role himself?
Yes. Yeah. And it's cool because Neil and I have gotten to know each other really well over the past, you know, couple of weeks, but we had a really kind of a fun bonding conversation at the closing night party, because that's when it all kind of comes out on.
Sure.
I was kind of freaking out.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, and he gave me that whole thing. It was really difficult, and he never made it feel difficult. It was surprisingly seamless how well he was at dealing with everyone but myself in particular. And you know, and there never really felt like an elephant in the room of him, you know, having done the West Coast premiere and stuff. But yeah,
and it's also fresh too. Like if you're doing a run that was only three performances, mm-hmm. right? So you don't have like the time of a regular run to sort of like recover from that. It's still very
yeah.
fresh because you haven't really, you know, the date of feeling all those things happened so recently.
Yeah,
you know?
That week I don't even know. I was like, what happened?
Yeah.
I think the Hollywood Bowl producers came in on our first day of rehearsal and was like, you are about to go through boot camp and you are about to turn around in a week and say, what just happened?
Yeah.
Because I think we had 8 days of rehearsal for that
wow.
whole thing.
And it was I don't want to say a choral presentation because it makes it sound like, but it was not fully staged.
No, this was the first
fully,
one that was fully
first ever
staged.
Fully staged.
Like
wow.
choreography. Like we were tangoing in Tango Maureen. We yeah. were, I mean, it was pretty
yeah.
full on.
I wish they could see my face because my jaw. And it was a full out. I mean,
yes, staging. No like music stands, like body mics. We had the Madonna mics, just like the original
oh,
cast.
Oh wow!
And,
yeah.
No wonder you have no idea what happened that
costumes.
Week.
I mean, it was wild.
It was the real dealio.
Blur. I would
the real dealio.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
can you imagine
know,
that? Such a short time.
Interesting with Neil because he just made an announcement today. You know, that he's having
right.
twins.
I saw that.
He and his partner. David Burke are having twins,
yeah.
which
yeah.
is awesome. So he was going through that, you know, I'm sure at the same time that he was
you know what?
Committed
he's
to.
He's such a pro. I didn't know that until today. I read that.
Yeah.
I read that online, and I was like, I mean, I'm going to call him, like, today.
Yeah.
And, you know, congratulate him. That's amazing. But, yeah. Also, another kind of revolutionary thing was with the Prop 8 getting overturned. That was while we were,
right.
while we were in rehearsals as well, and I was actually with Neil when that happened, and they made kind of a faux, we're getting married, kind of, you know, they
yeah,
were
yeah,
it,
yeah.
Being
so,
serious, but little did we know that they were actually adopting twins.
And all that
week.
Was going
yeah.
on at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Neil Patrick Harris, when we I did a show a couple of years ago called Straight Up With a Twist. Actually, I still do it on occasion. It was called Straight Up With a Twist. And
you have to give them the subline.
The tagline is, the world's a cruel place when you're a straight guy with good taste and a great eye for color. And but it predates the whole metrosexual thing.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for since 1999 actually. And the production got nominated for an Ovation Award out here, and we went to
which
the,
is like our Tony.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I know the
and Neil Patrick Harris hosted the awards, and it was the first time he's become a fixture on
oh
award
God.
Shows now.
Yeah.
But this was sort of him cutting his teeth as a MC. For the Ovation Awards, and just seamless, just friendly, mm-hmm. just, I mean, when you said he was a pro, it just, I was blessed to see him in such a in early stage of that, to just really see him just, you know, because that really, you can't fake who you are when you're emceeing a show off the cuff like that.
It's true. So, and you know, I thought was interesting, and we'll, and this will be the last thing about Neil, and we'll get back to your business. But Neil, also this week, there was a campaign that was initiated by the Los Angeles Times, by a journalist in the Los Angeles Times, because Neil did not get nominated for his hosting of the Tony Awards.
Oh, but didn't they take care of it?
They did.
Yeah.
But it was as a result of this journalist started contacting the Tony Awards, doing the article in the Times, and doing the whole kind of round robin thing with everybody involved and the National Academy of Arts and Sciences. And that's how he got back on the ballot.
So does this make three for him this year?
I think so.
Yeah, he said if he gets three, he'll give me one of them. So,
do you have that in writing? Do you have that in writing?
I don't know. The twins might one up you on that right now.
So, right, yeah. Skylar, this experience in Rent, which was so phenomenal, it was phenomenal as a spectator and certainly getting to know all of you on that day, which we did in the sea rehearsal, because I was blown away by the rehearsal alone.
Oh, that's right. You went earlier that day.
The rehearsal was phenomenal. Yeah. You know, and we knew that it was like in, it was there. And what day of rehearsal was that? Like 3, 4, 5, something like that? It was a Tuesday. Yeah, you opened on Friday.
I guess it must have been 5 or 6.
Yeah.
He just told you he doesn't remember anything about the week, and you're grilling him on
the
dates.
The last thing he said to me when he was leaving the place that our location was, I have to go get my hair cut. That's what you said to me.
I was getting my hair cut. And that was my lunch break, by the way. I don't think I took a 10-minute break or a 5-minute break. And but, you know, everyone was really game for everything, especially the fancy schmancy people that we had in the production.
Yeah.
Probably more so than anyone. I mean, Nicole Scherzinger would grab me every moment I was trying to go to the bathroom on a 5-minute break.
You're a lucky man.
And she was just wanting to rehearse the tango. Like, she's still on Dancing with the Stars. She's like ready for, you know, she's ready for show day.
And who would have thunk it, right?
Yeah.
Dancing with the Stars to being a knockout performance, right?
Unbelievable.
In Rent.
Well, she's a pro from the whole Pussycat Dolls thing.
Oh, yeah, but I know. But the Pussycat Dolls is one, you know, one style of singing. The other, what she pulled off on that stage was something else.
Well, And
your character was so interesting to me, because you're kind of that character, Mark, is the kind of glue that holds everything together. It holds the storyline together, and it helps the audience kind of get through it.
Right.
And you had some moments, my friend, when you were doing duets there with Aaron.
Yeah.
In the show, Aaron Teviot, is that how you say it?
I think it's Tveit.
Tveit.
Yeah.
He was amazing from Gossip Girl on television, also from Broadway. You had some outstanding, moments vocally there.
Thank you.
You should have been proud of yourself. Did you feel it?
Yeah. I know this is so corny for me to say, but I really was just having a blast. You know, I really felt comforted by the fans of the show and by the people that were just there. It was so supportive. I mean, it can feel pressured because there's 18,000 and all the numbers and the names and all that can really build up for someone.
Sure.
But I never took it that way. I kind of was just exciting. And the bowl is set up in such a way that you can't really, from the stage's perspective, you can't see the depth and the scope of the entire thing. And since it's encompassed by trees and nature and, you know, just like the stars, I mean, literally, it's kind of magical.
Yeah,
and
sure.
It really feels great. I listened to the record. I mean, I wasn't completely cold coming into it. You know, I knew the songs. Right. Of course, I had to memorize lyrics and certain monologues and stuff like that, but I was familiar with the melodies, and so I was just kind of living out a dream up there, to be honest.
So, in doing so, how does that compare to opening night on a Broadway stage, such as you've done? In Spring Awakening, what was that like?
I was so green when Spring Awakening was that whole thing. I mean, I was so new, and that was just a surreal experience to begin with, because I think I've gotten better over time at being able to take things in and really appreciate things in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Spring Awakening was such a whirlwind, and it's crazy because from start to finish, I think it must have been about 2.5-3 years of being involved with it, from the workshops to the off-Broadway.
From the very beginning.
Oh, from the very beginning.
From the
so you weren't just cast.
Because that workshop was like 2003, was it six?
Well, there was one that Leah did that was in 2001, and then it was kind of, and then I think some stuff happened that is so over my head that it was just kind of lull for like 4 years, and then I think 2005 is when we did the Lincoln Center Jazz at Lincoln Center concert reading.
Because then it was in December of 2006 that it actually opened on Broadway?
Yeah.
Yes. At the Eugene O'Neill Theater,
exactly.
I think?
Yeah. And before that was the Atlantic Theater. We opened that, I think, May of 2006.
And then you did the run through, what, 2008? January?
I think it was July 07 I did it because I left with four other original cast members on the same day. And I remember we all had our own individual stuff going on, and we just thought it would be really great for us all personally, us all as a group, and for the show itself to get a complete new support system, you know, have the opportunity for five new actors to kind of bond and be able to support the show.
That's really admirable. That really is admirable, because you don't often hear that. So much in this business you hear about the people who have their own agendas. I have this project coming up. So you should be applauded for a decision like that. I think that's very cool to think in terms of not only the quality of the show, but also the experience for the actors replacing them.
Yeah, well, right. I think we really owed it to the producers and everyone who just almost kind of took care of us as their own. We were really like their children for a little bit. And we were also new to it, so I feel like that was the ultimate kind of gift back to them. I hope they took it in the right way, because really what we were witnessing, people coming into the show, and I don't know if most people really know what it takes to come and replace a character in a Broadway show. I think it's like a 2-week rehearsal period. You're with a stage manager and a book.
You go,
and it's not the full set and not the full lights, and you don't get really the complete experience until you're up there.
Yeah.
And I've never done it myself, but I've witnessed and tried to, you know, help guide people through it from my perspective. So I just figured that would, you know, we all came up with it. Me, Phoebe Stroll, Brian Johnson, Remy Zakin, Lily Cooper. We all just kind of came together and we're like, well, what should we do now?
That's a good point. I don't think most laymen are aware of the fact that the understudy or the replacement role, they have it much more difficult than the person who, you know, creating the role. Obviously, they have, the replacement is able to see it and watch a finished product. Mm-hmm. But in terms of their own preparation, they don't have nearly what the person they're replacing usually has.
An immense amount of respect for those people. No.
Trial by fire.
Yeah, exactly. Baptism by fire. Yeah, exactly.
Now, Paul said at the beginning of the show, one of the things that we do here is kind of initiate our guests with telling a little theater story about themselves, the most embarrassing moment on stage. We don't have a lot of time, but
okay.
Did you have one?
Yeah, I have one. There's one like pre-story that's just really quick, and it's during Spring Awakening. I had this compulsive problem of splitting my pants. I think I did it about
a man after my own heart.
Everything involved pants.
Because we were, you know, the show was originated, you know, it was based off of an 1891 play by Frank Wedekind. So you have the costume design as these German 19th century suits, but you have Bill T. Jones' modern choreography where we're jumping off ladders and things. So, I mean, things are going to, you know, they're not going to work well together at some points. And I used to do this stunt where I jumped off this huge ladder, and I remember I would always just come down so hard, and it would just, I was like, all right, well, I know. And we had it set. I mean, we had my backup pair, and I would go right after that. So that was one thing, but that recurred. So I guess another one was when I was in my junior year of high school, I did a production of Bye Bye Birdie. And of course, who hasn't? And I was playing Albert Peterson, and they used to have sets where it's kind of two dimensional, and they had a backdrop that was made out of all wood and painted as the town or the office or the city.
Yeah.
That was just for the lack of a budget, I think. And that was kind of our set designers. He used to do things like that a lot, and it was very effective. They used to get great write-ups in our, you know, in our
in
community.
In the school paper.
Yeah, of course. No, I'm very proud of those plays. I really am. And we had our great crew. So, you know, half the football team would be, you know, moving sets, and I just
I think one sandbag must have gotten away from a crew member, and it just came down.
Oh.
I mean, I think it was during one of the Albert's like ballad. I think it was during that one "Talk to Me" song when he's kind of trying to coax Rose.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful song.
It's a whole nice moment in the show.
Barbershop quartet. I mean, it's a gentle, really, you know, nice moment for that character, and it was just crash, bang, and then like, and it was just one of those
he brought down the house
situations where it just, you know, boom, 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 boom.
Oh, of course.
And then this falls because of that, and then
the domino effect.
Yeah, and then you hear, you know, a chorus girl scream because, you know, then fell on her shoe, or, you know, so it was, yeah, it was.
You see how much we have in common, he and I?
Yeah. Yeah.
Same show.
Michael did Bye Bye Birdie.
Uh-huh. For years, I did the
Dick
show.
Dick Van Dyke and Jerry Van Dyke.
Yeah, all of these stars through years. And my deal was, I share with you, was the quick change from New York to Sweet Apple, Ohio at the top of the show.
No, that's a bad one.
And, yes, we had 30 seconds, underdressed. Oh, goodness, third time I'm telling this story on air. Underdressed, you know, from our New York clothes to the Sweet Apple clothes, and in a strobe light, in
Why
the
not?
Round,
wow,
3,000 seat theater
at a dinner theater
in the round, no. And the lights come up, and I'm standing there waving my little American flag in my little red sweater with my little white shirt, and I look down, and I'm wearing a dance belt and only a dance belt,
wow.
No pants.
My gosh.
Yeah.
So 1,500 of those 3,000 people got a good look at the other side of Michael Sterling.
A couple of people in the front row said, "Hey, bye bye, Birdie."
Yeah, exactly. And the others said, "Money back." Anyhow, my goodness.
Well, Skyler, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh,
please stay with us for the rest of the hour, and please chime in. We're going to move into our live arts calendar now. Michael, would you like me to kick it off?
Please do.
I certainly will. Fiesta Argentina 2010, Tango Canción de Buenos Aires, hits the stage of the John Anson Ford Amphitheater one night only, Saturday, August 21st. This living history of the tango mixes the traditional tango quintet musicians, singers, and dancers with projected paintings and photographs, some from tango's earliest days in the 1890s. The Otero Dance Company radiates sensuality and fire, power, and melancholy in this portrait of the great Argentine urban dance tradition.
Get ready to enjoy the escapades of a dynamic duo in perfect harmony. Join California Philharmonic when it presents Beethoven and Broadway at the Arboretum in Arcadia on August 21st and Disney Hall downtown Los Angeles on August 22nd. The blend of the Cal Phil Chorale and special guest vocalists and the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra will include the famous fourth movement from Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, plus hits from The Music Man and such Disney classics as The Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, and Little Mermaid, to name but a few.
Now through August 22nd in Solvang, California, the Pacific Conservatory of the Performing Arts presents West Side Story, a triumphant legend where love transcends language, time, and place. While Manhattan's West Side rumbles with the clash of jets and sharks, Maria and Tony seek a somewhere their romance can thrive. In their revolutionary work that changed the course of the American musical, Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim and Arthur Lawrence bring their award-winning genius to the immortal story of star-crossed lovers caught in a turf war of rival ethnic gangs.
Iconic recording artist and musical chameleon Cyndi Lauper will perform August 27th at the Greek Theater in Los Angeles in support of her latest release, Memphis Blues, in stores now. Lauper will perform favorites from her new release, plus her famous hits. After 25 million albums sold, 13 Grammy Award nominations, 2 Emmy Awards, 2 American Music Awards, and 18 MTV Video Music Awards, Cyndi Lauper continues to dazzle as a singer, songwriter, musician, actress, and a human rights activist.
Four actresses portray 27 roles in the Group Rep's production of String of Pearls, now through September 5th at the Lonnie Chapman Theater in NoHo. Dramatic yet fresh and funny, the pearls touch the lives of mothers and daughters, sisters and friends, even husbands and wives, as they weave a deeply affecting story of love and loss.
Bedroom Farce, a romp that may leave you grinning even as you turn down your own sheets at home, says the Los Angeles Times, is about four couples, three bedrooms, two celebrations, one blazing argument, and an illicit kiss or two. Alan Ackerman's ingenious comedy shines a brilliant spotlight onto the trials and tribulations of suburban marriage at the Odyssey Theater through September 26th.
And I think we have Don Grigware on the phone. I've just clicked him in. I'm hoping that Don is there listening to us. Are you there, Mr. Grigware?
Yes.
Hello, Don. How are you? You're on the air here at State of the Arts, and Michael and I are Looking forward to your review. How have you been, Mr. Gregory?
Terrific. How are you, Michael?
I'm fine, Don. Thank you for joining us today. And
how are you, Paul?
I'm good, Don. Good to talk to you. So Michael tells me that you saw a production of Funny Girl at the Sacramento.
I did. You know, it was a thrilling experience. Let me just go back a little bit. I'm dating myself, I know, but I was so fortunate as a teenager in 1964, because I was just a puppy at the time, to see Barbara Streisand do Funny Girl on Broadway. And what a thrill that was. And so when I heard that Vicki Lewis was doing it in Sacramento, you know, based on the shows that I've seen her do in the area here, the Reprise shows, and she won an Ovation Award for Hotel L'Amour at the Point Blank Theater, I said I just have to get up to Sacramento to the Music Circus to see this particular show. And she was phenomenal. Now, the most that an actress can do, you can't compare her to Barbara Streisand, but she made the part totally her own. And this is all that an actress can do. And it really made me realize the reason why the show is not done that much in Los Angeles or in the surrounding areas is because even though we have some wonderfully talented people, we don't always have a person who can carry that role, who is a great singer and a great actress, and Vicki Lewis is certainly up to it. She was just fantastic.
And you know, Don, many of our listeners might remember her, of course, from that wonderful TV series not too long ago called News Radio with Phil
Hartman. News Radio, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I know I have a couple of minutes, so I want to get a couple of the other people in here.
Oh, please
do. A lot of Broadway, New York people, Brad Little, tall, handsome, as Nicky Arnstein. Alex Corey, a veteran of the Broadway stage, played Mrs. Bryce marvelously. And Michael, you know, Michael Paternostro.
Of course.
Who we know as a musical director.
Yes.
In many of the vocal productions on the stage, dancing and singing and acting as Eddie Ryan. What a joy to see him. I'd never seen him on stage before. He was just wonderful. And then also Helen Keller, adorable as Mrs. Strakosch. And Ron Wisniewski, formidable Florence Ziegfeld. Thought he was like Walter Pigeon. He was just marvelous. We're brilliant cast. And Glenn Casale directed
I was just going to say.
Round.
Yes, Glenn is fantastic.
So let's think you, Michael, talk about Bye Bye Birdie. And you know how difficult it is to get those props up and down the aisle and to move with lightning speed. The crew was incredible. I mean, it was just, they moved these set pieces on time when the lights came up and actors made their costume changes very, very quickly. I mean, Vicki must have had at least 15 or 16 costume changes to make.
And, she wasn't left alone in the dance
panel. It was a phenomenal show.
Like
really was.
Right?
So Michael just said, Don, that Vicki wasn't left alone in a dance belt. So that's always
well, you've got to ease up on these jokes. You guys are having entirely too much fun there. You know? I wanted to say to the two of you, congratulations. I have been listening in, and you are doing a great service to the LA community.
Well, Don, thank you. I know that Michael thanks you well, and we should also point out the fact that you provide a great service too. Don has a phenomenal website called it's Grigware Talks Theater,
and also one of one of the most important critics on the West Coast here, and especially in Los Angeles for Broadway World.
That's right.
Print on Broadway.
That's
World.
Right. And
I have a good time doing it, so it's a lot of fun, and I know you guys are having a great time too, and it's wonderful to listen to you every.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to have you on the air, Don, and we'll sure be doing this again.
Okay, terrific. See you soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Was he talking about Sacramento Music Circus?
Yes, he was.
I did a show there.
Did you? What'd you do?
Grease.
Grease, of course. You're perfect.
I got my equity card.
Who'd you do? Who'd you play in Grease?
I played Sonny.
I beg your pardon.
Sonny.
Sonny.
Who'd I do in Grease?
Who'd you do in Grease? Well,
LA,
I was only in the islands for a little while. I did Tony in college. Not Tony.
Tony.
West Side Story. I still got West Side Story.
Tony's
I did
the,
do Tony.
Resident T-Bird.
Tony's a guy who actually whacks Danny.
the hybrid, the hot wax.
So don't start.
We won't even go there with
stories.
The hot wax. No.
Let's move away from that. Let's talk to Otta Woolfolk. Otta is with
us. Otta Woolfolk. First of all, Otta.
Yes.
What a beautiful name.
Thank you.
Otta Allison
Woolfolk.
Yes.
Thank you.
So now, Otta, how much of a problem is it in your life to have an apostrophe in your first name?
You know, I have an issue with the fact that I can't have it in my website address. Like, it's not my name without the apostrophe, but I can't have the apostrophe on my URL.
Or your email address.
Or my email address.
That's right. So let's just give out your email address now. So
before we get, you both have unusual names, actually, right?
Yeah.
Skylar, what's just real quickly, where did that come from?
My parents gave it to me.
Well, yeah. Whoa, lady.
He doesn't mean to lose you in the jargon, Michael.
Yeah, no, I don't know. My parents have always been kind of into unusual original names.
Because I noticed your agent, Mike's assistant's name is Coyote.
Yes.
And I said to Coyote this morning, where'd that come from? I got to ask, you know.
Did he give you the same corny response that I just gave
you? He said his parents were quite creative. That's what he said. Mm. Yeah. So, and then you have this beautiful name. Where did that come
actually,
from?
Actually, my name is from the Nigerian language of Igbo, and it means princess first daughter. And when my mom was pregnant with me, her dear friend was married to a Nigerian gentleman, and they brought her a book of names. And I am the youngest and the first daughter, so I'm her and my dad's princess.
Oh,
and,
my God. Your dad is a princess?
No, I'm his princess.
Oh, you're his princess.
But otherwise, my name would have been Maya.
Odd is much more. Odd is much more
better.
Now, before we get into what one of the things you're going to talk about today, Otta, which is the Virtual Channel Network, which you're a huge part of.
Yes.
You're an on-air host for that among your many duties
producer,
there. But you share your experience of the film you recently did, A Haramaya Bridge.
It's called The Haramaya Bridge.
Haramaya, thank you.
Yes.
What?
Right,
like, you knew the difference between Haramaya and Haramaya.
You wanted to take that
You
line.
Knew the difference because you got the paper in front of you. I was trying to wing it, Sterling. Okay.
But it's a beautiful movie, and actually my brother wrote and directed it. It stars Danny Glover. He's also an executive producer. Stars Ben Guillory and awesome actor who is associated with the Roby Theater Company. And we shot in Japan, and we shot in 2008. We premiered over in Japan last year, had a successful run, and we're currently in our U.S. release, and it will be on DVD after we finish our release in theaters.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So probably this fall.
Forgive me, Paul, for interrupting you. When you shot it in Japan and it premiered in Japan, you said too. So was it in English? Was it dubbed?
It's both. It's,
wow.
Both
so that's
in
a whole
English and Japanese.
At the same time.
At the same time.
Wow.
So the subtitles would be on the screen.
It's just two audios go at the same time.
Yeah, there you go. One here.
Yeah. Sounds very
one
muffled.
There. What an emotional experience.
Yes. So that had to be amazing to be filmed in Japan.
It was amazing. It was one of the most beautiful experiences I've had as an actress.
I saw the... I didn't see the film. I saw the promotional material attached to the film because I helped Otto do this postcard for a promotional postcard utilizing the poster artwork and everything. And just the stills from it are stunning. You know, without even seeing the film itself, just the stills, the visual picture and the stills.
Well, it's amazing because Japan... plays a character, actually, Kochi Prefecture is where we shot, and it's a character in the movie. It's so beautiful.
Well, and the opportunity to work with Danny Glover, I mean, that must have been phenomenal, right?
He was amazing. He's just such an awesome person, actor. Just, it was such an awesome experience. Just a giving person, fun.
He seems so talented.
Yeah.
What a nice experience. So let me ask you this, and Paul too. I mean, because I know you're more familiar with this than I am. Virtual Channel Network.
Mm-hmm.
How did you? Now I know you do both, but how did you segue? How did you become producer writer?
Virtual Channel. Of course, us actors have to have a day job. But Virtual Channel Network actually came about. My co-producer, shout out to Seth Colton, was doing an industry event called Industry RSVP, where he'd have industry guests, agents, casting directors come in. And it just kind of came up as, this is a really great tool for actors. And Gary Marsh of Breakdown Services wanted to bring it kind of to a broader audience, I guess you would say. So the idea for Virtual Channel Network came about. Seth was brought aboard, and I came aboard. He asked me to join him because he knows I have experience in production as well as being an actor. We both have experience in casting.
Right.
And it's really a service back to the community. It's a great service to anybody who wants to be in the industry, but a great tool for actors, for people who are interested in casting. And what's unique is that we have casting directors, agents, directors, writers come in for shows, but they are the host of their shows. You know,
right. So you're sort of really getting it from the horse's mouth.
You're getting it from the horse's mouth. Obviously, this industry, people's opinions are subjective, and you can ask five people, you'll get five different opinions.
Right.
So it's a really a great way to kind of be on the pulse of what's out there, what some of the attitudes are.
Right.
And it's great. I came across an actress recently who found it before she moved out from Philadelphia, and she said this was her boot camp.
She went
to the channel. She went, all the episodes are archived, so she went through the channels, was watching the shows, and she said it helped her immensely when she came out here.
So it was sort of like a little lesson, like a schooling about the industry out here before they came out here. So what are some of the, because, I mean, being Virtual Channel Network, it's different channels.
Right.
What are some of the different, like, program offerings?
Certainly. Like, we have our Premier Events channel, which is kind of our best of the best. We do an entertainment show. We'll go out to events, red carpets, and cover them.
Like a man on the street type thing.
Man on the Street.
Okay.
We have a great show called Up Close and Personal, where we have two guests who basically interview each other. We've had a brother and sister team. We've had a husband and wife team. Currently, we have Jeff Woolnall, a television director, and his wife, Claudette Roche.
Oh, wow.
She's an accent coach and actress. So you get both sides of it from somebody who knows the guests well. So it's like a fly on the wall type conversation.
Oh, wow.
We have a Real Deal, which is a channel where we have actors submitting their demo reels. We also get short films at times. We have a talent manager and a casting director that are reviewing them and critiquing and giving, you know, supportive kind of criticism or suggestions on how they can better their promotion to the industry.
Okay.
We have a show with casting directors, Inside Casting, where we see really inside the process.
Yeah, I've watched that a number of times. Yeah,
yes.
It's really, every actor should. It's really educational.
Just like every actor
should sit in on the audition process, like help with auditions at some point.
Absolutely.
It's very telling.
Actually, Michael Donovan's been on. He's a friend of Virtual Channel Network.
We love him.
Michael's terrific, and Peter Matias from Michael's was office. Was he involved with Rent, Peter?
I think so. You know, the one time that I went in there, I there were so many people, it was almost a blur. So
yeah.
If people didn't come up to me at opening night and say, hey, I'm this person, and I did this for you, it was just really overwhelming.
They're lovely guys and very important in our community of Broadway out here in Los Angeles and television and film and obviously in yours.
Absolutely.
So it's one of, in other words, this is something like, you know, gosh, it sounds like a Showtime or an HBO. It sounds like one of those specialized channels, which it is.
And I didn't know everything was archived. It's much like what we do here, Michael.
Right.
All our past episodes on LA Talk Radio are archived, so you're never late chiming in.
And one of the many services of our sponsor, Breakdown Services.
Absolutely.
But it has Actors Access, which is phenomenal for actors.
Absolutely.
And so many other things that they provide. What a great service. What
and it's as simple as virtualchannelnetwork.com.
Right.
Absolutely.
Is the website.
You can go there, navigate the channels, and go to the episode listings, and you'll see everything there, and you can kind of work your way through it.
Well, Ada, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for telling us about Virtual Channel Network. Thank you for sharing your experience.
Absolutely. And Skylar, thank you for joining us, too. I have one question that I didn't get to ask you, and that Aston, with that last name, are you connected there to...
To the John Aston Patty Dukes?
Are you?
No, I'm going to start my own.
Are you?
Yeah.
You know what?
That's
for a moment, it looked like he was going to say yes, and he said no.
We have 2 minutes and 45. I think we went 1 minute and 45 seconds. Do you think you can fit
in
your Elvis story?
I think I can.
Tell the Elvis story.
So at the pool that first day, Bellman walks by. Hey, Michael, what are you doing? Been nice to see you. Back at the hotel. Yes. I said, where are you going with that tray of food there? He said, well, come here. And he leans over and whispers in my ear, and he says, I'm going up to Elvis Presley's suite in the penthouse. And he said, are you interested in coming along? And I said, what do you mean? Am I interested? I'm there. And he said, but you got to stay 6 feet in the background. 6 feet behind me. Don't say a word. So we go up the elevator into the penthouse, and I'm 6 feet behind, and I'm, you know, minding myself pretty good. And then
I think, you know, this door is going to open in about 2 seconds, and I'm 6 feet away from it. How am I going to see the guy? So the bellman rings the doorbell, and the door opens. And, of course, when that process happens, I inch right up, so I'm right next to the cart as the bellman is saying, "Good morning, Mr. Presley." And, of course, it wasn't even morning by that point, but it was breakfast food. And he sees me. Elvis sees me. He said, "And who are you?" I said, "I'm Michael Sterling."
I come with the breakfast. Yeah.
Didn't Jeremy Page 90 times?
Yeah, exactly. And I said, and he said, "Well, come on in here. Come on in here and sit down." So the bellman takes the tray in, and we get asked to, you know, sit, and I'm talking with Elvis, and I'm having the time of my life. And the bellman says, "Okay, enough of that. Come on with me." We leave, and we're out the door, and the only thing I didn't ask the man that I wanted to ask him was if he'd have me paged at the pool.
That's the Elvis story. Thank you both, Skylar, Anna. Thank you so much for joining us. We got to wrap it up. This has been State of the Arts on LA Talk Radio. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Paul.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.